rides his pony down life's lane, searching for the why of all the pain he knows. He'll never be the same.
Yes, we are.
Hey, Legs.
Hi, Lizzie.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We got in a little, had a little trouble with the sound check, but we're here and we're ready to go. We're on day two of Punk Life Week. We're focusing in on the slow life, and today's episode is on slow food and the like.
Yes, but before we do that, I'm going to give Legs and Lizzie's definition of punk. And that is unity, DIY, nonconformity, strength, speaking out against injustice, community, compassion, equality, and peace, and damn good music. And yes, today I'm looking forward to learning about what you have learned about the slow life, and you're going to present, because I have no idea, and I'm looking forward to this episode a lot.
Am I the only one that's presenting?
No.
Okay, good.
No, of course
yeah,
not.
Yeah, we're gonna talk it over together. And we mentioned our punk definition just so that when we talk about punk, you know what it is. We also want to let you know we have free download seeds we like. Our seeds are starting to sprout. Our tomatoes, we have the first tomato sprouts coming up. We planted a little bit late. But some of the other things have been coming up, our Asian seed mixes, our Jack and the Beanstalk San Bernardo blue beans look super cool because they're so big.
Well, it's getting hot now, so probably things are going to really start.
Yeah, right. It's warm. It's not hot yet, but well, it's warm. Yeah. It's compared to what it was with all the cold weather. Yeah, and
hot weather for our growing, right? It's been like cold, hot.
Yeah, it does. I'm sorry to contradict you, but it hasn't been hot.
Well, it was 80 degrees
yesterday. We get to 110 degrees here, so no, it's beautiful. It's beautiful weather. But yeah, but Legs is from the Bay Area, just moved here, so I guess 80 is hot for you.
Hot is hot. I don't like hot, so.
I know.
Remember, in Ireland, anything over 65 is a heat wave, so.
That's right.
Right, so.
And then the other free download that we have, because last week was Punk Love Week, is Six Love Tools. And we think it came out really nicely. There's six. We each came with three love tools that we use in our relationship, put it together into a little mini five-page download that you can get on by just going to the show notes and clicking on the link. And yeah, so we wanted to remind you of that,
too. And we hope you try it.
So, would you like me to start?
We
kind of go back and forth?
Yes.
Well, I had three things. I don't know why I did three again. Maybe three is just in my mind.
Just a balance.
You don't have to have three. But I...
Okay. I'm going to have 10.
You can have as many slow food things as you would like, Mr. Sometimes we're feistier than others, and I think this might be a feisty day.
No, I'm actually really, really not feisty.
Okay,
I'm really excited.
Good. I'm not feeling feisty either. So, do you know how I like to quote myself?
Yes, I do. I know you do. Yes.
This is a new development because I have my book series, and my current book series, which is related to what we're talking about today, Slow Food. It's called Mono Mutante. It'll be coming out in a few months, and it's on food systems. There are, you know, there's always a really evil nemesis, and there's a lot. It's easy to find that in our current food system. But I have, some quotes, and sometimes I like to write something. So I wrote something about slow food.
Oh, you did?
Like if I happen to be on a podcast or something, or Legs was saying, Avis, what does slow food mean to you? Maybe you could ask me that.
Well, I would say, Lizzie, what does slow food mean to you?
Well, Legs, What slow food means to me is using all of my senses during a meal. So if this day contains my last breath, I could tell Buzz or my dad or God exactly in detail what my last meal was and that I was joyful eating it, that I enjoyed this human form to its fullest.
That's pretty cool. Bixen, that's pretty cool.
But I wanted to just think before I started in on, you know, learning more about slow food, I wanted to think about what I already know about it. And for me, I think it's that enjoying the meal that's in front of you, like being in the moment, you know, the definition of Zen, just being in the moment. And so before I go into what I was going to talk about first, what do you think of with slow food?
Well, first of all, you're taking the slow life philosophy and applying it to food. And so, and I feel the same way. And I think we have discussed, we're both vegetarian, trying to get to being vegans. And I eat slow anyway. And then now that I eat things that are just so much fresher and so forth, that you enjoy, it's just, it's really something just to sit there and very calmly have a meal with you, especially. We just had a beautiful lunch together, you know, it was nice, and sat there and ate some healthy food. And I just enjoy food more now that I'm trying to apply the slow life principles to eating. And so that's what it's sort of, like you said, we're pretty much in the same, you know, thought here, that it's just enjoying, when you slow down, you enjoy everything in your life. So food should be one of them. Mm-hmm. And we're rushing around all the time anyway. And, you know, one of the big things in the slow life movement is taking your full lunch hour if you're working.
Huh.
So if you take that, you know, concept, and you're now into slow food, you know, they're sort of applying the two together, and you could have a beautiful lunch at work and think how much better you might feel and energetic in the afternoon when most people are grabbing caffeine and other things, and they're sort of like this...
sitting at their desk.
Yeah, exactly. Now they, you know, just try it.
Nice.
You know? And I'm going to try.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've tried some working lunches, and we still will do it if we have a day where we know we're racing. But we found that it just didn't make for a very relaxing lunch.
No.
And we decided early on, like, let's really do our best to sit down and just have lunch and talk about life and things other than work, now that we're working together.
You know, and well, as a child... You know, my family was sort of crazy, but the one thing, the one traditional thing they did all year round was that you had to be home for dinner, and you sat there at the dinner table, and there was a conversation. There's no, well, back then there was no electronics because, you know, still the horse and buggy era. But but we sat there, and we had to sit there as a family and have a discussion. And so I still remember that, you know, an enjoyable part of my childhood was doing that, even in the summertime when we had to come home, be home at a certain time, sit down, have dinner. Yes, we could go back out later, but I didn't realize that in a way, my parents were practicing the slow life with our dinners every night. And so it's a good memory I have.
Yeah, same here. We always ate. I'm trying to think, lunches would be at the table, but my father would be off working, so, but dinners would always be all of us, and yeah, we had different rules. You couldn't, no singing at the table, which seems like a silly rule,
yeah.
But it was just time to gather and, you know, eat and talk, and not be too wild.
Oh, so your family
no clapping at the table either.
Oh, really? So your family would just suddenly burst out in song, and it got stopped.
We would if we could have, but we had a rule that there was no singing at the table.
Wow.
Could you sing at the table?
No, I don't.
You
think
don't remember a rule about
it? I don't remember.
It?
No, and you know what's interesting is that I then took from my childhood, and then with my daughters, we did the same thing.
Yeah.
And even when there were, you know, when electronics were coming in, mm-hmm. they weren't allowed to have any of that there at the table. And again, it was something I looked forward to as a parent sitting mm-hmm. there with my daughters and checking in with them. Because, of course, they would, as they got older, they would just scatter after dinner. But, you know, it was the one time I knew I could have them for an hour. And so...
Would you need to say, may I please be excused?
No. Everybody just... how do we do that?
Yeah, we had to ask to
really?
Excuse.
No, they had to still sit there until everybody was done.
Okay.
So I don't know when that rule got created.
Yeah, we could leave a little early, but we had to say, may I please be excused?
Yeah.
And
so,
to leave the table.
Yeah, but... it's something that hopefully that art isn't being lost by a lot of people out there. And
yeah.
If not, you know, we're hoping.
Awesome. Well, the first thing that we wanted to talk about was just this slow food movement in general. And, you know, we've talked about just a slow life movement, and you can't really say, oh, this slow life, you know, started at this point in time, or this slow life movement, because there was a time when everyone's life was slow.
Yeah.
And there were probably times in history that you could imagine certain societies got things revved up here and there. But generally, you know, a lot of agrarian work. And so, but the slow food movement specifically... started in Italy, and I don't have a lot on that other than in researching this book I'm working on and just being curious and hearing about the slow food movement, I knew that was the case. And then there are various slow food communities and slow food organizations. So the main website, slowfoodusa.org, no, I take that back. That would be the U.S., branch, and then there's slowfoodca.org. And then I did find the manifesto, mm-hmm. and I was going to read part of it, but do you have more to say on
yeah.
the Italian slow
yes.
food movement?
So there was a gentleman, I think his last name was Petrini, who this got started because they wanted to put a McDonald's, it's 1986, they wanted to put a McDonald's near the Spanish Steps in Rome. And he got incensed about that, and so from that came this organization that has branched out. So not just
we don't need to look it up. We can look,
no
put
no
it in
I,
the show
I,
notes.
I'm I
just
will.
Taking
so
I'm a
saying,
note in case it's not
yeah.
Petrini.
So besides just there is a slow food organization with chapters, and they have a certain setup of doing various different things. So it's branched out to all these different aspects of not just the fact that they didn't want a McDonald's in Rome. So now it's about biodiversity and sustainability and those things. And then it's so the gentleman in Italy, and it's headquartered, I think it's called BRA, it's B-R-A, in Italy, that's where the organization is. But then if you go there, you can see all the chapters throughout the world. And then in our backyard is a chapter, a number of chapters, and there's a whole hierarchy. It's like a little mini, I don't usually like to do it, government of how, you know, the different like... committees, let's say, or what they're going to, you know, each one does, and they fulfill its need of ultimately not just savoring the meal, but the other parts of it, and, you know, down to the farming and the type of farming and everything else. And it's quite fascinating. There's a lot of information out there that we just, you know, we can give the links in our show notes and wouldn't have the time to say everything, but it's really just from that one act has branched out to something really amazing all
yeah.
over the world.
That's very cool. Yeah, the manifesto they title it International Movement for the Defense and the Right to Pleasure. So that's very cool, thinking that, you know, that we have a right to this enjoyment of life. That's kind of, after I read that, I added the part about the joy in my little statement, so I cheated a little bit. Born and nurtured under the sign of industrialization, this century first invented the machine and then modeled its lifestyle after it. Speed became our shackles. We fell prey to the same virus, the fast life that fractures our customs and assails us even in our own homes, forcing us to ingest fast food. Homo sapiens must regain wisdom and liberate itself from the velocity that is propelling it on the road to extinction. Let us defend ourselves against the universal madness of the fast life with tranquil material pleasures. I'll read a couple more and then you should read the rest. Against those, or rather the vast majority, who confuse efficiency with frenzy, we propose the vaccine of an adequate portion of sensual gourmandise pleasures to be taken with slow and prolonged enjoyment. Appropriately, we will start in the kitchen with slow food, in capital letters. To escape the tediousness of fast food, let us rediscover the rich varieties and aromas of local cuisines. Do you want to read the rest?
I'm sure. In the name of productivity, the fast life has changed our lifestyle and now threatens our environment and our land and cityscapes. Slow food is the alternative, the avant-garde's repose. Real culture is here to be found. First of all, we can begin by cultivating taste rather than impoverishing it by stimulating progress, by encouraging international exchange programs, by endorsing worthwhile projects, by advocating historical food culture, and by defending old-fashioned food traditions. Slow food assures us of a better quality lifestyle with a snail purposely. Yep, chosen as its patron and symbol. It is an idea and a way of life that needs much sure by steady support.
Yay. That has a lot of stuff in there. It's really cool about the advocating for historical food culture.
Right.
And thanks for reading that.
You're welcome.
I think that's really like a manifesto is written to inspire, and it's driving all of these chapters forward, and they have this framework to live by. And if it's okay, I'll go into my next thing.
Sure.
Is that all right?
Go for it.
So the next thing was this, it's related to market gardens and food communities. And John Kemp's most recent episode, as of today, is episode 113, and his podcast is the Regenerative Agriculture Podcast. And he interviews Jean-Martin Fortier, who wrote the book The Garden Marketer, I think. Either that or The Garden Market. And in this incredible podcast, they're talking about the growth of garden that's why it's not coming together. It's market gardens, not garden market garden. Anyway, you know what I'm saying. And he has taken 1 acre of land and for about 20 years has been a proponent of these small gardens, and that you can make $150,000 on an acre of land through this really intense gardening. And I didn't realize, and he talks about it in this episode, that these gardens started outside of Paris, and I don't remember the decade, but the farmers would bring in this food to the markets in Paris, and that's kind of the basis of the history of it. But in the podcast, he talks about how food communities, artisanal food communities, are the same wherever you go around the globe. And if you're not in a place like the town we're in now of Calusa, California, is an area with, and I apologize to any smaller farmers that are working in more of a organic or artisanal type way, but there are a lot of commodity farmers here. And so I would not call Calusa a real food community. The farmer's market has like four or five stands. And if you drive about an hour north, you come upon Chico. They have a robust farmer's market. It's also because they're a larger population. But I think we just have so much rice and tomato and, you know, almond production that's on a big scale that we're not, I wouldn't consider us to be a food community. But other food communities where, you know, people are making cheese and there's small farmers that, on the podcast, he was saying how that wherever you go around the globe, then that when that community is strong, it's almost the same. And it that's slow food philosophy enriches the community. And another encouraging thing from the podcast, and it's episode 113, is that there's a movement back to that, which is really encouraging, because sometimes you look at what exists and it has been a bit discouraging for me to see, you know, still how many pesticides we use around here and the like. But yeah, I think that was, I'll put the link in the show notes, but I highly recommend that episode. And the other thing that was beautiful is towards the end of the podcast, John Kemp was talking about how his family farm had about 25 acres and they read a lot of books, and they read Cheaper by the Dozen, where the dad of that family was from a military family and started to make all the family processes more efficient, right? And so John Kemp, as a kid, they enjoyed that book, and that his brother changed the process of the vegetable production from having to reach like 3 feet to get these vegetables processed to like 18 inches. You could pack the fruit with two hands and really sped things up. And in looking back, he wished that they had taken that saved time. And he said that rather than just creating more time for themselves, they just grew the business. And this John Martin, he goes by JM, he said a similar thing, that he had a very busy life. And farming can be very busy. So even in the realm of being close to nature and the land, that it's a conscious practice to slow down and make sure that if things become more efficient, that it's just, you're just not in the crazy life, even in farming, right?
Business, right?
Yeah.
And businesses, as they practice, you know, making things more speedy, it would still cross over to farming, you know, just because they're in a field or in a packaging center or however they do it. It's guess humans are taught in school and everything else how to speed things up and make it most efficient. And how could I, like we said in a prior podcast episode, that multitasking is not the slow life. You know, sometimes maybe automation, you're going to lose some of the beauty of what you're doing. You know, it's interesting that John Kemp recognized that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they talk about in the small-scale gardening, not garden markets, but market gardening, that some of the tools that are mechanized, like these batter-operated tools, that I don't think in the Amish community they're allowed to use.
Right.
But that they had similar tools, like a regular drill, right? Some, I can't remember what he called it, but the same types of tools that just used human power. And
they have drills just like people have a little, you know, egg beater.
Yeah.
They have drills that do the same thing, yeah. So they probably have.
And he was talking about the drill that you would get like maple syrup out of a tree.
Oh, there
like
you go.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure like drilling a hole or I don't know, but it's, in the end, they were just talking about how you can get revved up anyone can get revved up and not, they didn't use the term living the slow life, but since we were having this episode, it made me think about it. And so it's really guarding your time. And GM Fortier said his wife had worked every season of their garden since they started. She doesn't grow things in the winter. She takes that time off. And that she was his North Star, and just this consistency of working the garden. Sounds like he, you know, has had a busier life touring around and doing different things. But it was really beautiful. I mean, it sounds like she might have more of the slow life than he Maybe. Did.
Yeah.
But anyway. Anything else on your thing before I go to the...
No.
Okay.
Go for it.
All right. Well, thank you. So the last thing So that was talking about food communities. The last thing I think that leads to slow food is planning food. And planning a picnic, a gathering, and planning through cookbooks. And from a practical standpoint, a lot of times when I'm thinking of what to make, I'll either have the dish or an ingredient, and I will use the internet and do some research. And it's always easy to find substitutes with the internet as well. So I'll find something I want to cook, and I'll see what we already have, and then I'll set out to shop. And if something's an ingredient, and our community isn't super gourmet most of the time, and so sometimes you'll need to find substitutes, but there's always usually four or five different substitutes for something.
Yeah.
That to me is enjoyable, but isn't as slow as more of a planning of food. And that planning could be walking in the garden and kind of planning the meal from a slow walk in the garden, or a slow walk at a farmer's market like chefs may do. And then I wanted to talk about picnics and cookbooks. And so let's just see where we are in our time. Ooh, we're almost at 30 minutes. So maybe what we'll do is... we could either go through this now, or we could make it a separate episode to talk about slow food planning and talk about food with a,
I
with
think
a
it's,
slow
well, I think it's,
food voice.
Yeah, slow. Slow food.
What would you prefer? Because I'm ready to go with it. I have five cookbooks.
Go for it.
Okay.
Yeah, we got time. You know, if it goes a little over, it might be worth this.
You can always pause it.
Yeah.
You could listen to a song. You could go for a bike ride and come back later. Yeah.
And it'd be there waiting for you.
So the first, I have five cookbooks here, and I think going through a cookbook is one of the most enjoyable things in life. And the first one that I grabbed is just, I just checked out my cookbooks and I thought, let's see what would be fun. There's the book Good Day for a Picnic by Jeremy Jackson. And there was another woman named Laura Calder who had a picnic book herself, I think, and she wrote to him and let him put this in her book. So I just wanted to read like how she would handle a picnic, and I think this is very much slow food. So July 2004, Chateau du Fay, Burgundy, France. Dear Jeremy, the truth about most French picnics is that nobody cooks a thing. Everyone just goes to the cheese shop for cheeses, to the baker for bread, to the charcuterie for saucisson, to the wine shop for wine, to the greengrocer for fruit. Then they slip a knife and corkscrew into their pocket and head for the park. And so I'm going to read the rest of this, editing a little, taking out meat and wine. And I just want to make a sidebar that if you are still enjoying those things, that life and its sensualness and the pleasure of food is 110%, if not more, able to be enjoyed without those things. And we talked about it in the last episode, that while you think sometimes wine is enhancing certain aspects of food, the pleasure that you can get from food, if you decide to become sober, and this isn't a saying, you know, get sober if you don't want to be sober, but I also don't want to be reading a lot about wine if I don't drink. Does that make sense?
Of course.
And I don't think we need to kill animals either for pleasure and for beautiful, amazing food.
No. There is no need.
So I mentioned the sausages once. That will be the end of that. There are other ways to approach French picnics, though. Since I'm living at the moment high on a hillside in remote Burgundy, 6 kilometers to the nearest proper town, if I did a picnic tomorrow, I'd be inspired to get much more sumptuous about it all. I love the idea of juxtaposing the great outdoors with extreme civilization, so my French picnic would go like this. I'd drag an iron table out across the lawn and set it up under the chestnut trees. Then I'd drape a great cloth over it, preferably one with wigged 18th century men in knee breeches printed on it, flirting with corseted but corruptible ladies. I would banish plastic and paper from the site and cart out china and sterling and crafts for water and pomegranate juice. I'd need good solid chairs with pillows on them, a stack of shawls in case wind came up, crystal glasses, and all the time in the world to eat. I think I'll stop it there, but she goes on to describe what she would make, what she would wear, her plum tart painted purple that would be on the table. And so I think when you think of a picnic, we haven't had a picnic in a while since, like, I think it's been a while. It's been several months, so we need to go on a picnic. What do you say?
I agree. And I will say the French really do know how to do picnics well. I know I can attest to the fact that, and Lizzie knows this, my kids went to a French school for a while, and what I looked forward to, I had to put up with not being able to speak French very well or understand it very well, but what I looked forward to was every springtime there was a big festival, and every province in France would be represented in a booth, and they would bring things from that province. And I don't know, the French just have a way of enjoying their food and the outdoors, because it was outdoors in a big, you know, grass field, and it was just a really enjoyable experience. So they were living the slow life that day, you know, and so, and yes, it seems like they just do go to the cheese shop and get a baguette. And I mean, in France, you can get a baguette out of a machine. So you don't
even have to. That's right.
So, you know, they love those two things. And yeah, it was really enjoyable.
Nice. So this is a slow food episode, so I'm not going to rush, but I have 4 cookbooks, and I'm going to talk about a recipe in each one. So we're also recording on YouTube, so I'm holding up the Korean vegan cookbook that I got for Legs for Christmas, and the recipe that I'm going to is bulgogi, which I may not be pronouncing that right, and it means grilled steak or meat, fire meat is the specific translation, but this is a vegan cookbook, and so the ingredients are soy curls, which are basically firm tofu that have been fried that gives it that meat. It's amazing. Wouldn't you say that of the dishes, we have different non-meat proteins like soy, or it's very, you almost forget you're not eating meat, wouldn't you agree?
Yep.
And then the other meat-like thing are mushrooms. It gives you that umami flavor. So it has shiitake mushrooms, Oma's Korean barbecue sauce, which is on page 45. This recipe is on page 235 of the cookbook. A scallion, a red onion, chopped green bell pepper, oil for grilling, sesame oil, and toasted sesame seeds. And it's this beautiful skillet of that, which you'd never know that wasn't a big skillet with meat. And it's just beautiful. So slow food is like looking through a cookbook and just being inspired and taking the time to plan, thinking about your gathering. And the second cookbook is Living Shojin Ryori by Danny Chu. And we went to Cha Ya in Berkeley for Legs' birthday, and it was such a beautiful meal. And after going there, kind of looked up the style, the specific style of this, it's called, the cookbook says, Everyday Zen Cuisine to Nourish and Delight. And these recipes are super, super simple and elegant. This one that I've picked is on page 46. And I'm probably going to butcher how you pronounce it, but it's Nazu Dengaku with Atsuji and Shishito. So I know what Shishito peppers are. The Atsuage, I was just talking with the person that cuts my hair. I got a haircut for everybody on YouTube. And she does karate, and she was saying that her Japanese is quite good, so she would be helping me with this. But it's Japanese eggplant, which we actually planted in our seeds. The word I couldn't spell, A-T-S-U-A-G-E, how would you pronounce that?
Atsuage.
And that is a thick deep-fried tofu, large blocks of fresh tofu deep-fried until golden brown, giving it a crisp coating. In this recipe, there's 4 shishito peppers, sesame oil, and then the dressing is red miso, sake, and sugar. And it's just a very simple, beautiful dish. The next, I didn't hold it up. This makes for good podcasting, doesn't it? When you can't see it and there's all that dead air, but I apologize. Then I thought I'd grab a magazine. This is Forks Over Knives, which is a plant-based magazine. And this recipe is jerk skillet with plantains. It's garbage day. Come here, buddy. Come here, Tail. Good boy.
Come on, Tail. You're okay.
Usually think of jerk with meat, like chicken, but no, forks and over knives are, this is plant-based, so there aren't any, there's no meat. In this recipe, it's green plantains, red onion, red bell pepper, garlic, finely chopped habanero. So this recipe might be a little too spicy for you, but we could just use a little habanero. Jamaican jerk seasoning, vegetable broth, brown rice, black beans, lime juice, sea salt, 1 mango, and fresh cilantro. Doesn't that sound good?
Yep.
So this is a great magazine if you're looking for plant-based recipes. And then I thought this cookbook isn't so sumptuous in terms of pictures, but it's by Baker Creek, where you can get the beautiful seeds. And the seed catalog is very beautiful, with beautiful pictures of vegetables. And so this is the Baker Creek Vegan Cookbook. And in here, the recipe I thought I would mention is apple raisin samosas. Now, this would be a day that you had a little more time, and you're going to take like a little bit of your afternoon to make something for later, which seems very slow food, doesn't it?
Yes.
So these, it makes 32 samosas, and I think in this case, well, let's just, I love flavors from all over the world, and samosas, those little stuffed packets from India, take kindly to a lot of different fillings, both sweet and savory. Here we came up with an apple and raisin version that works especially well and firm, with firm heirlooms such as Gravenstein or Northern Spies, which maintain their bite even after a quick hot fry. So for the dough, there's flour, salt, coconut oil, and ice water. And then the filling is vegetable oil, onion, garam masala, mustard seeds, chili flakes, grated ginger, minced garlic, 2 large apples, peeled and diced, golden raisins, salt, black pepper, and vegetable oil for frying. So not a huge amount of ingredients. I haven't made these yet, but I would like to. Do those sound good to you?
Yes.
With some kind of nice, we could find a nice little sauce, dipping sauce for those. So thanks for listening to that. My goal was to just slow food is paying attention to the ingredients, to what, just that time that you're going to enjoy the food. And by thinking of the preparation, I think when you are thinking about the preparation, that will allow you to take time when you're eating it, right? Because right. You've been a part of it. And when it's a gift, when Legs got home just a little before dinner yesterday, and sometimes when you don't have that time to kind of settle, the person that's made the food is like, oh, we need to treat this like I just spent, you know, a couple hours making this. And I think it's that lesson in slow food. It's like, if it is a rush time, it's not the best time for one person to make the big meal if the other person is having a rush day. Like, both people, I think, need to be present. But it was a good dinner, I think.
It was an excellent dinner. I was really good. And, you know, what's interesting is I have found that, so I had to teach myself how to cook because my mother was not a good cook. And because I was on my own for a really long time, I just had to. So I found that when I was rushing around making something, that lots of times I didn't want to eat it. Like, I was just like, I had been rushing around. All I want to do is just sit down, and I don't even want to look at it. But what I'm finding is, and we've been, we do our own cooking quite a bit, and I do it from recipes, but I find when I've slowly done it and thought about it, that I actually want to eat my own cooking. And I want to sit down, like, with you and eat the food. So there's a correlation between rushing around and trying to rush to get, even if you're using a recipe. But for me, if I just, I'm not rushing, and I could be still using a recipe, but I take my time to do it, I'm actually interested in eating the food when it's ready to be done, as opposed to, I just don't want to look at it.
Huh. So when are you talking about when you were cooking for your kids
and your
family?
Yeah. Exactly. It's always been that way.
Huh.
But when I'm slowed down and just taking time and thinking about it, and especially now since, we eat much more vegetables and fresh things, I just look forward to eating my own food now.
Nice.
And so I've noticed that.
Well, that's good. Very nice. Well, thanks for listening to the Slow Food episode, and we'd love to hear recipes that you love, how you've slowed down to enjoy food, anything that you'd like to let us know about, and we will be talking to you later, or tomorrow.
Thank you.
Down life's lane, searching for the wild of all.
Thank you for listening to the Liggs and Lizzie Punk Farm Love Life podcast. Please subscribe to be notified of new episodes. It really helps us if you leave a review.
We'd love to have you join our Patreon family. When you join, for as little as $5 per month, we'll personally thank you on the podcast. You'll also receive special episodes and videos from us. Podcast music is by Lizzie's brother, who goes by Squint Todd and the Horse Thieves. See the show notes for links to other things we mentioned.
Be safe and happy until next time.
Do stuff, don't buy stuff.
Peace, punk, plants.
We don't need much, we just need each other.
Sometimes he thinks he can feel his pain, he knows it'll never be the same. black dog just tags along and listens while he sings his song. Love is all she knows. So on and on they go. Oh, strangers cry. Strangers cry.